If we look to the answer as to why for so many years we achieved so much, prospered as no other people on earth, it was because here in this land, we unleashed the energy and individual genius of man to a greater extent than has ever been done before. Those who say that we're in a time when there are no heroes, they just don't know where to look. You can see heroes every day. There are entrepreneurs with faith in themselves and faith in an idea who create new jobs, new wealth, and opportunity. They're individuals and families. Their patriotism is quiet but deep. Their values sustain our national life. Now, I have used the words they and their in speaking of these heroes. I could say you and your, because I'm addressing the heroes of whom I speak, you, the citizens of this blessed land. Your dreams, your hopes, your goals.
In God we trust.
Welcome, everybody, to the In God You Trust radio show podcast. Still very grateful to be able to share with you some exciting, fantastic content today. We have about an hour ahead. We're actually radioing in from the Pacific Northwest today, where we have some sunshine and then snow, and then we have rain, and then we have sunshine, snow, and rain. Yeah, it's one of those winters. So exciting to have you. So wherever you are on Earth today, tonight, this morning, we applaud you for taking the time to listen in as we navigate the world of commerce and wealth, the sea of change at work, with state planning, civil law, financial strategies. And my hope is to help simplify this very complex matrix system that we all find ourselves in, the commercial world, and provide you some practical insights so that you as listeners can apply these things to your everyday lives, whether you're managing your personal wealth or operating in a business. We have been covering private trusts and estate planning, civic law versus statutory law, public versus private jurisdictions, money and debt and credit, negotiable instruments, legal terms and definitions, U.S. codes, and commerce competency. This is 2025. Can you believe it, everybody? We have come into this new, quote, golden age, where we are now starting to witness some massive shifts, not just in our personal public lives, but in our spiritual lives. And I hope that that comes through as we address these different topics and try to bring this down to where we as people can come together and get the big boot off government off our neck and start to come into a place where we have security, peace of mind, and happiness and health. And that's really what, you know, I live for every single day. A real quick background about myself and this show. We do this every other Sunday at 5 p.m. Central Time, 3 p.m. Pacific Time. And we are going to be moving to a weekly show format here in the near future and possibly even be using some video. Imagine that. I remember when I went to college way back in the 1900s. I went to a little school in Pullman, Washington called Washington State University. And I was a very indecisive young man. I did not know what I was supposed to do. I just knew that I was a good athlete at the time. I liked art. I liked people. I liked communications. And I remember a gentleman said, "Hey, Kevin, why don't you get into radio? You seem to have one of those radio voices." And Washington State University was known for its communication school. And, you know, when I started to look into what that meant, it essentially was saying, if you do get a chance to be in radio, Kevin, you're going to be indoors inside this little box every single day and not be able to be outside. And so I'm kind of an outdoors guy. And here I am now, 40 some years later, on the radio in a worldwide format, using the internet to distribute this content all over the world. So the irony behind all of this is, you know, just keep your eyes open to things that happen in your life. Don't try to force a wet noodle into a fork. Let your energy flow, because energy goes where energy flows. And that's pretty much what it's all about. Okay, well, let's get started. The last couple of episodes, we have been diving into the world of cryptocurrency, asset-backed cryptocurrency. We've had a guest on by the name of Dr. Brian Fontenot, who is the founder of XUSD Blockchain Technologies and Holdings. And I would like to plug that because that is, I believe, one of the greatest innovations that has come around in a long time. Commodities-backed assets hooked to a blockchain and tokenized and monetized. Over $400 trillion worth of assets now on the books under contracts, and that is about ready to blow wide open. For all of you who are potentially looking for a safe way to shelter your assets, shelter your taxes, and navigate like the wealthy, you may want to consider opening up a private trust for yourself. You can get that at www.ingodutrust.com. Excuse me, .org. That's ingodutrust.org. And click on, watch a short little video. And if you are interested, I'd be more than happy to connect with you, give you some consultation, and show you how the wealthy operate through the privacy of private trusts. Okay. So about, gosh, Rich, I don't know how long it's been, maybe 10, 15 years or so since we first met. Rich Keel is my guest on the radio show today. Rich owns a company called Free Bridge Capital, Discovering the Alternative. Rich is bringing institutional finance practices and solutions to business owners and entrepreneurs for many, many years. Rich has immensely enjoyed independence in the financial and risk management arena since October of 1885. As a fiercely independent professional, he's traveled the country seeking the best and brightest minds, reserving judgment until compiling all of the information possible from all major industries and disciplines in the financial services sector. All roads led to meeting Nelson Nash, author of Becoming Your Own Banker, and the Mises Institute of 2001. Truly Jerry Maguire experience in his life he refers to as a revelation. As he says, any free thinking and open-minded discussion about finance that does not include conversation about privatized alternative banking and contracting among free people should lead to the following conclusion. Collateralization and control are the most fundamental aspects of money and wealth creation. Advice that leads to a person to a position of independence on another is a sale rather than an education. High risk, high reward versus low risk, high reward. If given the latter as an option, this will always be chosen by a prudent, sensible person. Institutions risk and leverage the money of others in order to create their own account by using models consistent with cash flow and hypothecation. And finally, if what you thought to be true turned out to be wrong, when would you want to know? So let's ask that question of our dear guest, Mr. Rich Keel. Thank you for coming on from Texas, United States. And we are so happy to thrill to have you on here. Why don't we go get started with what is it that you would like to talk about with all the people around the world today, Rich?
Thank you for that introduction, Kevin.
You're welcome.
Feels like just yesterday I started in this game. But, you know, my story doesn't change that much. I've developed some beliefs over 40 years. And like you said in the wonderful introduction, I met Nelson Nash in about 2001, who wrote Becoming Your Own Banker. And I was born again financially because I really, really started looking at what the institutions were doing to us, not for us, and all the legislation around money really was about extracting wealth, not helping us build it. And so, you know, prior to meeting Nelson, I had just learned from a lawyer in New York, Bob Strauss. He started a program called Stock to Cash. And so I had started teaching people how to do non-recourse stock loans to finance some liabilities and other things. And most of the advisors I had met at the time, they didn't even that I broached the subject with, they didn't even know what I was talking about. And that was a big watershed moment to be able to understand what that meant and deliver that to people. And then shortly thereafter, learning about how to use the mutual life insurance industry in a manner that was consistent with how banks and other financial institutions were using it. And anyway, it's just been an amazing journey. So
I got a question for you, Rich. So I remember a gentleman came to me one day and he said, you know, if you were taught what money was, you'd have a different outlook on what you do to actually acquire money, to acquire health. And a lot of people are absent of this, let's just call it financial competency, because our general public schools and the way we're brought up and, you know, just our whole society is based on not telling the people what's most important, at least when it comes to our commercial world, right? So I never really knew how money was created. I did know how to go out and make money, but I really didn't know how it was created. And a gentleman asked me to go to a meeting once, and it was a company called Northwestern Mutual Life. I was very young. And I sat in this meeting, and I kept saying, here's a guy who is my age in college, but he's driving around in this beautiful Mercedes. He goes hunting every weekend. He doesn't have to go to class. And I'm like, how do you do that? He goes, Kevin, you have to understand that there's a world out there called insurance. And most people run away from it because they think life insurance is all about dying. So they shun away from it. I went to that meeting. I was blown away, Rich. I was like, oh my gosh, this is how you can create wealth. So your tiptoe into the life insurance industry really has exploded now. Now you have this tremendous knowledge base that, and what would you want to share with people right now? What is the most important thing for them to know, and without getting into the weeds about this whole industry of insurance?
Yeah, I mean, risk management is, you know, the main header, right? It's the headline. But ultimately, when you think about what is an insurance company, more specifically, what is a life insurance company, and it's really just an aggregation of human mortality. And if like you're dealing with a mutual company, like your first exposure, I mean, all of the policyholders are an owner of this company that, based on trust law, they basically created a pre-engineered trust for us to step into and finance either monthly, annually, or whatever. I mean, back in the day when I first started, you could fund your trust, your i.e. your life insurance policy, with a single payment, and you had enough capital in that contract that it would generate a dividend. And by the ordinary age of mortality, your cash value would equal your death benefit. But all in all, it was really just a trust that gave you the ability to guarantee your human life value to your family, whether you made it to the goal line or not. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Sure does.
Yeah. And so, but then when you start looking at that contract through the banking lens, like the institutions do, you realize, hey, I could hand that piece of paper to a banker, just like in that wonderful movie, It's a Wonderful Life. And, you know, any banker, you know, throughout the country will give me, prime minus to create liquidity on that contract. So that tells a story in and of itself, doesn't it?
It sure does.
That's perfect paper, because essentially the life insurance companies that built this country, they're nothing more than really bond portfolio managers. They're taking those premiums that we were aggregating there, and then they're, you know, buying corporate government bonds and real estate notes, you name it, and managing that money on our behalf. But it's the beauty of it, it's behind this tax-free firewall, because ultimately life insurance is, it's a social good. And so therefore, in America, at least, we've enjoyed some incredible tax advantages in that industry. And it's, ironically, the sad part is it's lost on everyday people, but it's not lost on the corporations and institutions who use it. But the average investor, or the average saver out there, they've been convinced by various people, I won't say any names, but that that's just a bad investment, or it's not smart, but they're just not looking through the banking lens. And how do you position capital to use it over and over? We've been taught systematically to park money and take all the risk and get hit with the inflation and cross our fingers and hope we win. But my process is about teaching people first stage capital, and then how do you use that capital to go buy other things like your crypto opportunities or whatever it is you want to do. Real estate, traders. We've worked with people from all walks of life and different financial levels. And, you know, once you understand the banking, equation, you know what to do.
So when I have a class or I do some courses and I teach people trust law, and I'm not an attorney, by the way, I don't give advice. I'm not a licensed CPA. I'm just an educator. I'm profoundly fascinated by the world of commerce and also private equity. Years and years ago, I was making pretty good money, but I was throwing half of it away to taxes because I didn't come from a really sophisticated family or educational background. I didn't go to an Ivy League school. I had to find out a lot of these things the hard way. And I used to just ask people that were wealthier than myself at the time, what is it that you do that I'm not doing? And that would get into a conversation. And there was always just, you know, these data points that kept showing up. Well, wealth management means, you know, insurance. It means diversification. It means compounding interest, the rule of 72, having a private trust, you know, operating from a different entity than yourself. And I was very fascinated by what I didn't know. And so I almost feel like I went to school after I got out of school, because the industry of knowledge around banking and the history of banking is fascinating, but it's also important for people to, I would say that you should take some time to study this. 99% of Americans out there do not have an estate plan. They don't know how money works. They have been put into six generations of curses because the truth about the way the monetary system has been working or operating right underneath your feet has been held back and kept out of your schools. So you speak at a very high level. I just want you to know that sometimes we need to kind of break this down just for everyday people who are just starting to say, hey, Rich, give me some nuggets. Tell me what, for example, what does privatized banking do? Why should everybody be thinking about this? And what does that mean? And how do you look at yourself as an important tool to help educate in a broad group of people out there about this concept of privatized banking?
Thanks for helping me bring it back home. I think that people need to first realize that 100% of us in society, well, most people are banking, whether they know it or not, right? I mean, you go get a bank account and you aggregate money somewhere, and then you turn around and spend that money. Most people really never even think about that process, right? Just like you said. And I encourage everybody to go read, get a copy of Becoming Your Own Banker. It's basically 85 pages, half of its charts, and it teaches you everything you didn't learn in school. I worked with some of the most sophisticated investors in the country, and they really hadn't thought that much about it either, you know, because of the fact, like you said, you come out of school and you just start chasing money and trading, you know, time for money and whatever, mm-hmm. in what form. And so, you know, another quip that I always tell people is, look, you finance everything you buy, because when you pay cash, you give up what you could have earned. And because of the way we've been taught to park money and then turn around and spend it out of that account rather than borrow against it, you've really never understood banking. You've been a victim of banking. You've never been a banker. And so our financial institutions have made it so that all of the people that come into financial services after college or whenever, they go get a bunch of licenses, and they go get a bunch of education from the very institutions that they work for. Well, ultimately, that education that we're given to give other people is to steer people back into the snare, right? Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So ultimately, you're really not thinking at a core level about, well, wait a minute, what does it look like if I don't put my money behind a firewall, like a 401k or a government IRA or whatever, where I'm just simply accumulating money? And you know, most people are never privy to, you know, self-directed IRAs and that sort of thing. That's kind of like the next step that people go to, right? Is, well, wait a minute, I still want the IRA bucket, but I, you know, but I want to do my own thing. So now you're delving into, you know, another level of freedom, but you're not all the way yet because, you know, ultimately you would aggregate all of your real estate, you would aggregate all of your different assets, and you'd put them behind a trust firewall, and then you'd borrow against that asset, and you'd keep your account would keep growing continually. And you just deal with cost of money. Like, okay, what did it cost me to, you know, to borrow against my own assets? I don't want to disrupt my core assets. But again, maybe I'm getting too deep in the weeds, but, you know, you first have to think about that as a possibility before you can do it. And I think that a lot of people are dissuaded because of, you know, the masses are taught, you know, the opposite of that. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, in our monetary system, which is important for people to comprehend, is that as we sit here right now, there is no money in our monetary system. Because lawful money is gold and silver, right? It's commodities. And right now, our, quote, notes that we're using to exchange for value are called Federal Reserve notes.
Right.
Federal Reserve is a private corporation. It is not the Treasury of the United States of America, the de jure constitutional republic that which we stand still. So in 1933, under House Joint Resolution 192, Congress more or less committed treason against the people, and they forced everybody to turn in their lawful money, which was actually at the time silver and gold-backed notes that were backed by the Treasury. And the good faith and credit was the Fort Knox, quote, commodities. Well, everybody had to turn that money back in exchange for Federal Reserve notes. And we went into a credit-based system based on a bankruptcy that happened in 1871 under the 13th and the 14th Amendment. When the bankruptcy was created, that means that a creditor had to come in and arbitrage the liabilities. And the creditor's name was the East India Trading Company. East India Trading Company was a British maritime shipping company. So that shipping company came in and it took on the liability of the debt because the United States borrowed money from both the British and the French to be able to win the Civil War at that time. And at that point, what happened was they had to change their name so that they could keep kind of the cap on what they were doing. And so they named that old shipping company, the United States, go figure, domiciled in Washington, D.C. in a 10 square mile area. That was the beginning of the deception. So we're run by a foreign banking cabal corporation that has installed a new form of money called debt. So what you're saying, and I'm just going to paraphrase this, is that when you understand or comprehend banking at the banking level, which doesn't mean you have to be, you know, you have to have all this knowledge. You just need to understand the basics, that when you operate as a banker in your life, whether you have a job, you go to work, you're a mom, you're a dad, you're a fireman, it doesn't matter. You are the money. You're the good faith and credit of the United States. Your trust that you may not even know that you have is backed by credits, securities, and bonds. And that's all bonded up through the name on your driver's license and on your birth certificate. So paper, Rich, paper.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Paper.
All yeah. Right. So define what 100% banking is and why should everybody be doing this? This is fascinating to me.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you just nailed it. I mean, right at the root, going back to 1871 and all of that, because a lot of people just stop at 1913, but there was a lot going on behind the scenes before then. And so the tripwire was that, you know, because the Federal Reserve and the IRS coming in at the same time was no accident, right? So you had to pay for that debt. And who's getting the interest and all of that. But so given that 100% of us are banking, right? Well, what is 100% reserve banking? And that is, well, if I understand banking and I, let's say I loan you $100,000 cash and you give me a deed of trust against, you know, your a home or whatever, a property. Us as free individuals, I'm 100% reserve banking. I've given you the cash and you've given me the collateral. I didn't need a government to do that. That's just contracting among free people, right?
Right.
So an extension of that, if I go buy treasuries, which I can do, you and I can go buy treasuries tomorrow, perform the same function that these reserve banks, these chartered banks are doing, and then I can go to park that, you know, at a brokerage firm, let's say it's Schwab, whatever, and then I turn around and go to any number of bankers that will do securities lending, and I can go get a loan against my own securities. I don't need a Federal Reserve Bank for that. I don't need to have my money be in second position. I can hypothecate my own money. I don't need them to do that. But that's where it gets really interesting, because you and I cannot rehypothecate. We can pretty much only hypothecate money. Rehypothecate.
So, hold on a second. Can you please, and that term right there, that, you know, some people may be cross-eyed and say, wait a minute, hypothecate. Could you please define what that means? Because that's a very important term.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's just borrowing against a secured, you know, an asset. That's hypothecation. Rehypothecation is what the Federal Reserve does, where it says, okay, these guys can do that 10 times over. Well, if you read their material, it shows that they only borrow, you know, 10x of what's in reserves. But you have to do a little Googling today to figure out, and I encourage everybody to do that. Go Google the reserve ratios at our banks now, post COVID and, you know, post 2008 and all these different busts that we've had throughout our history. The banks are getting thinner and thinner and thinner in terms of their reserve ratios. So you're basically putting your money in a bank. You're an unsecured creditor. You don't really even own your own money. But if you're 100% reserve banking, like you and I have been talking about for years now, we're in first position. I'm not relegating my safety to the Federal Reserve Bank or the FDIC. And so another term for it, actually, I've got a link I'll share with you later. Have you heard the term of narrow banking yet?
Narrowly.
Narrowly. Yeah, right.
No, please, but share that. Yeah,
but
share
it's
that.
Narrow banking is a really fascinating conversation. There are a bunch of advocates that are petitioning the Fed to allow people to do what Mr. Peter Schiff was doing when he started his bank, Euro Pacific Bank in Puerto Rico, which they promptly shut down because he actually established a bank. It wasn't a federal chartered bank, but he started a private bank to promote the idea of 100% reserve banking. And it's right on his website. Well, they came in and shut him down because he became competition to the Fed. But nobody can stop us from the process of banking. We are all banking. We can decide how we want to bank. You know, a lot of my friends are in crypto and they're staking crypto and they're banking against their crypto. I have clients that are banking against their life insurance, and I have clients banking against treasuries. And now, you know, with the advent of home equity agreements and stuff like that, you can just bank against real estate privately. So anyway, I'll pause there.
That's okay. So in as my brain is listening to you, I'm seeing pictures because that's the way my thinking. Are we decentralizing the centralized bank by not necessarily having just to go to crypto? I mean, what are you talking about by showing people, individuals, families, how they can operate with this capacity. That is decentralized.
Thank you. You just said it, and I should have said it. But essentially, that's what we're doing, is we're 100% reserve bank against our own paper and assets is basically decentralized banking, which was the vision of Mr. Nash all the way back when he started teaching his course in Birmingham at the Mises Institute and other, the FEE, the Foundation for Economic Education. So that's really what his desire was. He wasn't trying to sell life insurance per se. He was really just trying to teach people how to take back their power and their own capabilities that were, the revelation is to make known a truth that was always there, right? Mm-hmm. So that's really all we're doing, is giving people back their power through knowledge.
I'm not sure who quoted this, but they said, give me control of the money and I can control all people.
I have it in my wallet.
You want to read that for us?
No, I'm just, I have it. It's on my computer. But I mean, I basically carry it with me every day, because it's in my list of quotes, but it was Rothschild.
There you go.
Rothschild. And I care not who make the laws if I control the flow of money. Right.
That's right.
And so, you know, and I don't know, I this might not be the appropriate place to bring this up, but before Mr. Nash passed away, we had an interesting conversation about the Tulsa, Oklahoma massacre. Are you familiar with it at all?
I am. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep.
So, yeah, I mean, it's been pitched as completely a race riot, but those people in Tulsa, Oklahoma had all figured out privatized banking. So they were called, it was called Black Wall Street. And mm-hmm. those people had figured out the banking equation about 7 years after the formation of the Fed. And so that town was destroyed by certain entities, let's just say, put it that way, and shut down, because I think they had figured out the banking equation and they were keeping all their money in their own community. So you can draw whatever conclusion you want from that, but I have my own suspicions.
Yeah, I mean, we're living in a open air prison that is controlled by people that have control of the money. And I think, well, what I feel, what I know in my heart, is that those walls are crumbling down fast. And the knowledge is going to the people. And people like you that are not just innovative and smart and nice and you care for people, but the fact that you're willing to be able to put some risk out there, and all of us are, right? Entrepreneurship is a risky business. It's not for everybody. 90% of the time, failure becomes your teacher. The other 10% of the time, you might strike it. But I think you said something in the beginning of this show, Rich, that really hits me, and that was people chasing money, right? And they wake up in the morning and it's like, I got to go to work. The bell went off. I got to hurry up and get the kids to school. And I've got to go put my 8 to 10 hours in just to chase whatever that wage is, and then chase back home, you know, just to hurry up and have dinner and try to, you know, manage by getting to sleep just long enough where you get some rest so you can go back and chase that money again, which is really exactly what the system wants people to become, is subjects, slaves, and debtors, right? Debtors in a system where, and I don't like to use that word derogatorily, slave, but, you know, when you're in servitude to this piece of paper that's fiction, you have to just get your mind wrapped around that. It's all, a lot of it is right between the 6 inches of your eyeballs, right? And I call this the most valuable real estate on the planet.
Amen.
Because what's between the ears and the temples of our mind is our thoughts.
Yeah.
And our thoughts are in foreclosure 99% of the time. So the reason they're in foreclosure is because somebody has control over your thoughts, because they're putting you in a rabbit trail. So now, with that little commentary, how do we get money to start chasing people instead of people chasing money? What would you say is that formula? Or do you have some ideas about that?
Concept? Well, I mean, the first stage for everybody, in my mind, again, is back to, if you don't understand the banking equation and you are not practicing your rights to practice banking, then I think you're chasing your tail because you're just chasing yield, or you're looking for the next crypto miracle or whatever. I don't look for those. I'm, we own businesses and enterprises. I don't invest in the public markets. I just that's by choice, right? To each his own. But there was something that that you just said that I wanted to respond to.
How do we get money to start chasing individuals? What can they do? Like with you, how does people get a hold of Rich Keel? How does somebody end to start a relationship with you? And what is your kind of your client
Well,
experience?
just Google RICHKEAL. I'm kind of
Rich
out
Keel.
there. Yeah, RICHKEAL. I mean, I've got a bunch of stuff out there on YouTube and various places. I've not been that prolific, but I did an interview about 15 years ago that I really liked. That was recorded, and I told the story about early on in my career. I was going through an airport, and I was with one of my partners, and there were two books on a shelf. One was called The Crash of the Millennium, and the other was called the Roaring 2000s. Remember that book?
I do, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, at the time they were bestsellers and everything, and I was grinning from ear to ear looking at it. And I said, you know what's funny is the institutions we represent don't have to care which way that goes. But the people we're trying to help, it's critical. But they have to be willing to get off the train and say, you know what, I'm going to go do my own research. I'm not going to go listen to Dave Ramsey and tell me that anything is bad because he thinks smallly of people, and say, well, I got to sell pablum to the masses. Go jam your money, pay off your mortgage, and load up your 401k, cross your fingers, and hope it works out, and I can retire on the high side of the boom, right? That's essentially what most people are doing. BlackRock just came out and decided, in very, very small print, to start selling life insurance products to their clients. And I haven't shared that with you yet, but I posted it on LinkedIn. It's in my feed, and you can read about it. Well, that has significant implications, that they're relegating wrapping annuity products into their funds, because we know that they can't really do the job. I mean, they've wrecked a lot of things. And so
A wrecking ball company.
yeah, it is. I mean, well, that's what I was going to key in on, is like, most people are such victims to inflation, and they'll never see it. It's a slow poison, and that's the one that kills me. I'd be happy to pay a 20% flat tax. I don't even care. Just so I could have my privacy. I could beat this. Everybody could beat the system. But because of our debt-based economy, and we're all victims to inflation, we're basically, we're robbing from our own brothers and sisters, right?
Probably from our future generations.
Correct. And so that's the part that really, really gets to me, is that I don't want to participate in anything that has to do, you have a young son in college, and I have a young daughter in college. I don't want to participate in anything that's going to systemically damage their possibility of a future, of a great future. And that's what we've all done. We've all been forced into an us versus them. And there's so many people that are profiting from different activities that just promote inflation, or exacerbate it. I'll say it that way. So, that's where I'm at in my life. And so I think that I love teaching banking, the process of banking. I've written a couple of pieces, like You Finance Everything You Buy and The Financial Sin of Omission, and things of that nature, that basically are exposés on, hey, what's really going on in the back room. And the hardest part too, Kevin, is this. the system has made it so that everybody who's professionally in financial services, whether it be insurance, banking, or investments, or whatever, with the repeal of the Glass-Steagall back in the 90s under Clinton, I mean, it all rolled up into one thing, investment banking. Everybody operates under a license. And then when you hang that license with a particular institution, now they tell you what you can and can't say. Where's the First Amendment in that? Right? You're literally, you have handcuffs on. Most of the people in financial services have their handcuffs on because they literally work for an institution that tells you, well, that's not compliant to say that. I'm like, how in the hell is the truth not compliant? But complacency as men and women who would, I quit when they told me it wasn't compliant to talk about non-recourse stock loans. I said, BS. I'm like, well, I quit. So I decided not to get paid a commission. I'm going to get paid another way. And that is, I set up a firm to go teach people these things. And I got paid by the hour to teach people. So I changed my equation and how I'm going to participate in this world, right? And that's what you've done with your business is you said, hey, I'm going to put my, you've put yourself out there all the way to the truth. And I commend you for that.
Well, thank you, Rich. And I know for many people out there, we come to some points in our lives where we have to have that internal conversation, and we have to decide, what is risk, what's reward, what is safety, what is complacency that you said, Rich? What is it to essentially volunteer your life for some big corporation that could give a you know what about your life per se? And giving up all of the hours of your time that you could have with your family, just chasing the dollars, so that even after taxes, you still have nothing left. And a tax, okay? And that three-letter word is so steeped in fear,
Yes.
so vile.
Right.
And
You have a duty to pay
you have a
this.
duty, exactly. It's a duty, right?
Patriotic duty.
Yeah, I want to make sure the roads get, fixed. That's the one I hear all the time. Well, if I don't pay taxes, there's not going to be anybody to pay for the roads. That shows you the ignorance and the level of distance people have from the way our financial system actually truly operates. If people knew that there was a CAFR fund, CAFR, which I think you know what that is, Rich. A CAFR fund is a private ledger in all municipalities. You would be shocked when you learn that these municipalities, these franchises of corporations, are operating as banks, private banks, every single one of them. Even the littlest municipalities have billions of dollars sitting in a private account, accruing significant portions of interest that's being handed them by special interests of people that want to keep the people dumb and keep them aware or unaware of the way that even the local community systems, right? Every single speeding ticket, every court summons, every little thing that you pay to go get your house, build a new fireplace, right? Those things all are monetized. Every one of those documents, the signatures on those documents come from a creditor, and that's you. Everybody out there, you're all creditors. You're not debtors. So it's. I'm going to read this to you. This is on my, I found this out today. Sorry, everybody. Just one second. This is so interesting. Okay. Google, 1893 Encyclopedia Britannica. In the 1893 Encyclopedia Britannica defined the word legal as the undoing of God's law. There it is. So, Rich, when you're talking about compliant in the statutory system, which is based on statutes and codes, this is man-made law. You're essentially operating with inside of a Luciferian trust, because that's what it is. This goes all the way back to Rome. And Rome, and even before that, right, had created Babylon, and it was it had learned how to institutionalize the concept of controlling its people and how what tax was. And so they'd serve them up circuses and all the breads and circuses that we talk about today in the football games, just to keep people dumbed down and looking in the other direction. Why the squirrels are going over here? They're over here stealing, plundering from the people. So the statutory system that we're finding ourselves in currently, and you could prove it every time you see either a president or a judge, look behind them. There's a flag. It's called the United States of America flag, but it has yellow fringe around it. What does that yellow fringe mean? We're at war. That's a war flag, and a war with people. The people are the enemy of the statutory system. So as subjects, slaves, and servants, and debtors and sinners, we are the enemy, because if we find out what they have done to twist this entire trust law system into their benefits or for unjust enrichment, that's where all this malarkey comes from. And so your heart sings in ethics, sings in profound commentary, like you're sharing with everybody, and that you're saying, I don't want to participate as a co-conspirator in unjustly enriching myself off not telling the truth to these people. That's really what you're doing. And that's why I love you, Rich, and I've loved talking with you for years. And I think most people who are listening to the show can identify with this mindset and this heart set and this way that we need to stand on our purpose and not stay and look away and ignore what's happening to you right in front of you. So we've got about 10 minutes left in this show, and I don't want to take up any more time, but you trigger me. You make me feel so good because I know that what we're doing is risky, but who cares? I mean, people have to hear about this stuff,
Well,
you know?
it's only risky to the extent that people shrink back, right? And so, what's going on right now politically has obviously gotten a lot of people triggered about what Mr. Trump is doing, and where is he really in this equation? But I don't really care, because I'm focused on the Constitution, and I'm focused on my rights, what rights I legally have, and how far I can take them. I think that people need to start standing up, and they are, and more are. And I mean, when did educating yourself become what's the word, the buzzword?
Noncompliant,
Well, no, what's
noncompliant.
the word everybody's using right now? Oh yeah, a tinfoil hat,
Right,
or
a conspiracy theorist.
conspiracy
Yeah,
theorist, so
right.
when did that become, well, we know when it became popularized because of JFK, but it's like, wait a minute, it's time. If we don't take, we've crossed the Rubicon now in the discovery of government malfeasance and corruption. And so there's never been a better time to start educating yourself. And there's probably nothing more important in terms of what's controlling that machine than the monetary system, right? Everything we've been talking about here. So yeah, I'm just going to keep beating that drum. And I'm now working with the third generation of families, at this for 40 years. I started working with people that were born in the late, our 1920-ish time frame in 85, and those people passed, and I'm working with their grandkids now,
Awesome.
and it's been a lot of fun, regardless where somebody has been or is, politically, whatever label they want to put on themselves. Most people identify with freedom and what's right, if they're just interested, just given that information logically. I mean, people will just lock on, and hey, I don't want my money in jail. I don't want my ideas in jail. I want to, everybody wants to be a free thinker, I think.
I know so. Yeah.
I mean, ultimately, if you ask somebody, that's always a great opener for me. It's like, do you want to be free? Do you want to minimize taxes? Well, Yeah, everybody does. I don't care if you're on the left or not. You know, nobody wants to pay more taxes. Oh, I know what I was going to say. You strummed a chord about The Law. Great book. You've read The Law by Bastiat, right? Frederick Bastiat. Yeah. Just another great book. Pirates of Manhattan is a great book. How Privatized Banking Really Works is a great book. I have a good, you know, I lead with a good three or four books that once you read them, you're cooked. I mean, you can't go back
That's
unless
right.
unless you just decide, hey, I love slavery and I don't care what happens to my, you know, to my children's children. So anyway, I think I'm exhausted.
Well, I want to end on a kind of a buzz out there is crypto, and you've told me that there's some shifts happening in the insurance industry with Bitcoin, for example, backed
Yeah.
policies. Could you just talk a little bit about that, and then we're going to close it up here pretty soon. But just there's a
Yeah.
new asset class, right? A new commodity. It's called cryptocurrency. And how is that interfacing with your industry?
Yeah, I've been involved in teaching people about private placement life insurance for a long time, which is basically for more accredited investors or higher net worth people. You can buy, you can basically create your own life insurance structure offshore and fund it with whatever you want. But there's actually a new product, you know, with the advent of crypto, that's it's Bitcoin based or Bitcoin denominated whole life insurance. And it's called the website is meanwhile.bm for Bermuda. So it's an offshore product, but you can literally, you know, buy a policy and have it denominated in the gold standard for crypto assets. And so yeah, it's a really interesting way to get at it. I mean, to have tax-free Bitcoin, you know, because it's built within the firewall of the insurance, you know, in the insurance regulations that are baked into our society, which it's really life insurance is the last private property in America, if you really, really think about it. Like, tax, I'm down here in Texas, and property taxes are wicked here. And so, I mean, if you can be taxed out of your home, do you really own it?
Nope.
Nope.
Pretty much.
So, no. And the asset class that I love very much is very much protected against that through several mechanisms. You're protecting yourself. So, sorry, I went over on that.
No. This is great. I mean, again, people can go back. Once this show is over, we're going to record it, bring it in. We'll be able to put it back up on the website so people can go back and recycle this and take notes, write down some of these books and things like that. Again, I want people to be able to get a hold of you. Rich Keel, is it richkeel.com?
Yep, that
There
works
you
too.
go. Okay. And go on to YouTube.
Freebridge.net,
Free.
richkeel.com.
Okay. Excellent. Excellent. Now, the last thing you and I were talking about a little earlier was the future, kind of like commodities markets. What do you see with commodities? How does that fit into everybody's everyday life? Like, what's going to happen here in the future? What do you think?
I'm so glad that you were going to end on that note. I became a big fan of Jim Rogers years ago. His books, his philosophy, phenomenal. He wrote a book called Hot Commodities, Investment Biker. I mean, just look him up. He's a phenomenal guy, obviously. And the natural result of all of this paper money is that all the, you know, all the speculators are out chasing paper and garbage, right? So we've left commodities in the dust for many, many years. And so commodities are foundational to production, right? So ultimately, I think with what you told me earlier today, if you could get those assets on the blockchain and get them to a place where you could aggregate a bunch of commodities and then borrow against it, I think that's some real banking right there. Does that make sense?
100%. Yes.
Banking on a commodities fund would be, it sure as hell would feel a lot better than just banking on a meme coin or something like that, right? I mean, I'm not putting my faith in anybody's meme coin. I want some meat behind it, behind my bank.
So the innovation of blockchain is a huge move in being able to have chain of title on all of these different transactions. And it's a 10-hour topic in itself.
Oh, big time.
The crypto market, which is a new asset class, has only been around since really 2010. I mean, commercially 2011, 12. So it's still a baby. It's a fledgling. Think about this
Yeah.
for a second, right? And I've been on the phone for the last couple of weeks with some of the wealthiest people on the planet that own these gold mines, silver mines, platinum mines, palladium mines, water, silica, salt, oil reserves, gas reserves, water. I mean, it's mind-boggling how much value is sitting in this earth. God gave us dominion over this earth, right? And it's also very expensive to be able to pull these commodities up out of the ground. So now there is a way to monetize those through contracts and to be able to bring those assets up onto the surface and pool them into a pool class and then be able to tokenize those. So what we're
Yeah.
talking about is actually happening. And there's over $400 trillion right now on the books, under contract, under patent, that people are going to find out about in the near future. And my hope is that people start to become competent, start thinking about trust law, start setting up another entity that you can start operating from as a banker. Start listening to people like Rich, where you can become fascinated by the wealth that you already have with inside of you. Because the treasure of the earth is the treasure that's in your mind. The spirit of your soul is what God gave you, and the intellectual property that you carry is what you can bestow upon others. Because we're not here to own things. We're here to provide people
Use them.
value. Correct. Yeah. Proof of use. That's all it is, right? You don't own your home. You can't take it with you. But if you can control it and have that asset grow and be able to lock into the banking apparatus that it is based upon, you will never have to worry about, quote, making money. You can't make money when you are money. You are the money. So, Rich, I appreciate you as a friend,
Thank you, sir.
as a man, as a father, as an American, somebody who loves this country very much and who is grounded in truth. And your veracity for the truth has been awesome, and I love you for that. And I want to say to all of you out there listening to In God You Trust, don't forget to go to ingodyoutrust.org if you want to find out how you can protect your assets, shelter taxes, and build wealth for generations to come. That's available for you. So peace and love to all. Have a beautiful evening, morning, wherever you stand. Thank you so much, and we'll see you in a couple of weeks. God bless you all. Have a beautiful day.